Hi, this is Paul Puckett, your host of Getting There. Welcome to the conversation. Today will truly be a variety show since we're going to talk about a lot of different things that connect mainly to your life, but money will come up. I want to take you back in time to the first time in your life where things changed. Now, they changed many times prior, but you weren't necessarily aware of it. Not many of us remember our own birth. I don't know anybody who remembers their own birth. But we go through changes in our life, particularly in our first 25 years. Do you remember the day, long, long ago, you had spent some time a few weeks before with your parents shopping for some new clothing and a little backpack? And one day, your parents grabbed the camera, dressed you up in your new clothes, helped you put on your little backpack, and walked you out to the school bus, or drove you to school, one of the two. They took your picture as you began your first day of school. Now, at that age, handling transition can be very easy, but if you think back, you know, it's very scary in some ways to go from your life as you knew it to this new thing where instead of being at home and playing with your friends in the yard, whatever it is you were doing, you're now in a structured environment with a bunch of other kids who are just as nervous as you because everybody's life just changed. Well, that prepares us for smaller changes. We get through elementary school, going from kindergarten to first to second to third, etc. Then we move to middle school or junior high, depending on how your town was configured. We get through that, and we transition to high school. And that's probably when we start thinking, one day I won't be in school anymore. And sure enough, we graduate, and we either go to work or we go to college. Many of us had high school jobs, so we have some familiarity with working, but we go through that transition. Well, let's go with the college route. It gives us a few more years of transition. So then we transition to an environment where our parents aren't there to say, did you do your homework? Did you actually go to class? Did you do the things that you needed to do? We become more responsible for our individual actions, partially because there's nobody there monitoring them. And then we finish college, and we begin searching for a job. And that's a transition. Other transitions we have that are, I'm focusing on the positive ones. We get married. We have children. We raise a family. We get another transition when the kids move out. Men particularly, but some women, have a big transition coming that they may be financially prepared for. Most people aren't. But let's just say you're financially prepared for that day when you say to your boss, I'm retiring. That moment is one of the biggest and most difficult transitions you will face. Why? It all depends to a certain degree on how much your job is who you feel you are. But even if you're a well-balanced person and the job is something you do, you enjoy, you liked your job, you enjoyed it, you enjoyed hanging out with your coworkers, you enjoyed working with your clients, whatever it is that you did, all of a sudden, that day isn't going to happen anymore, and you go home. There's a great book by a guy named Ernie Zalesnik out of Canada called How to Retire Happy, Wild, and Carefree, which I highly recommend you read about 5 years before you're going to retire, that focuses on this transition. What are you going to do every day? Do you still want to take a coffee break at 10? Are you still going to have a structured day if you worked in an office environment? How do you make that transition? Golf gets old after a while. Well, okay, it doesn't, but still, you may feel weird playing golf 7 days a week, or tennis, or whatever it is, or maybe you have no hobbies. I knew a fella whose hobby when he retired was watching TV. All of us figured he would not live long after retirement. He made it into his 90s. No, I'm not talking about my father. He had lots of stuff he did. And that's what I want you to think about. when you're leading up to this huge transition, which you may not have thought was that big, you may be looking forward to, I can't wait until the day I don't have to work anymore. What an awesome day that will be. Well, there's a problem. If you're not prepared for setting your own schedule and figuring out what it is you're going to do so that you've got a smile on your face at the end of the day, you could get in a little bit of trouble. Depression issues, a feeling that something is just not right. It's just not how your life had been prior to retiring. So I wanted to bring up that issue because the focus of most of what we hear when it comes to retirement is financial. And that makes sense too, because your money is also going to go through a big transition, maybe, as you shift your focus from growth to income. Of course, some of that transition may have been happening gradually anyway. But here's the thing. Money has an advantage over those of us who are human. It's not capable, as far as we know, of emotion. So to the money, it's no big deal. And that's why you'll sometimes hear me say, the money, when it comes to retirement, that's the easy part. Now, that doesn't mean it's easy to get the income you need. That doesn't mean it's easy to make sure the money lasts the rest of your lifetime. That all depends on what you're starting with and how much you need to withdraw. Very important things to consider. But what's more difficult for most people that have the money is transitioning from a career to retirement. The other issue is when we go to school, not to get morbid, but it's important, it's a factor. When we go to school for the first time, our whole life is ahead of us. For many of us, retirement has the feeling of, well, I'm done now. I don't know how much time I will have enjoying my retirement, but you know, that's my last big transition. I'm done. That's depressing. And it's also not accurate. For many people, life begins at retirement in some ways. At least a new life begins. They take up a new career. They finally take up painting. They go back and travel somewhere and begin traveling to places they always wanted to go but couldn't. They begin gardening. Whatever it is they always want to do but just didn't have time to do. For those people, retirement is a wonderful time of life. I want your retirement to be like that. And so I wanted just to bring up and open the show today with be aware, whether you're 40, 50, 60, or retiring tomorrow, your biggest challenge may not be the money. The money part is easy to address if you do the things you need to do. The sooner you start, as I said on the show we dedicated to millennials, the easier it is because you build up a lifetime of living below your means. As a result, you have a bigger investment pot to generate the income you need in retirement. So I'm not downplaying in any way, shape, or form how critically important it is to save enough for retirement, to invest wisely, to grow the money, and to be in a position where you do have choices. But I do want to emphasize, what almost everybody has trouble doing is making a happy, seamless, smooth, enjoyable transition to, I don't work anymore, or I work at something else, but it's not an income thing. Let's take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll be heading to another topic.
Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee.
Speaking one. You didn't know that's what we were speaking of, did you? You know, hey, retirement should be a good thing, don't you agree? I mean, we've worked so hard to get there. I say we. I'm not there yet. I'm in my 50s. Some of us retire that early. Not me. I like what I do. And quite frankly, I need to build up a little more before I retire, as I'm sure many of you do. Maybe that's why I focus on it on the show, so you can join me in getting there to that point where we have what we need to retire. I say let's have a little fun. There's a song all of you have heard that I'll be playing later, but I'm not playing it now. It's a song about people, sort of, large group of them. And it was inspired, or at least the style was affected by another song, one you may not have heard. So I'm going to play a song by John Lee Hooker that you probably have not heard, called Stuttering Blues. And what I want you to think about as you're listening to John Lee Hooker in this blues style called Stuttering Blues is, what song might it sound like? This is our music education moment of the show. You probably won't get it. I didn't. Matter of fact, the only reason I noticed this is I was looking up the history of the song I'll be playing later, which is extremely appropriate to our topic today. This song, well, okay, maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, but let's have some fun. Take a listen to John Lee Hooker's Stuttering Blues. Enjoy the song and think, I wonder what big rock hit might have been inspired by this song.
Baby, or is your boyfriend around tonight? You sure look good to me. Swear I'd like to carry you home. Lord, I could love you a while tonight. Lord, have mercy. Saw you. You almost knocked me off my feet. I couldn't hardly play my looking at you. Swear, man, that woman got some pretty eyes and legs. I know the cat that you monkeying around with, baby. Which is pretty nice to you, I believe you are, which you have to be, the way you look. You sure look good to me. Give me your address. I'll make a special trip to see you. You have a phone number? So I can call you up. Excuse me, baby. I can't get my words out just like I want the into zai to get them out. But I can get my loving like I wanted. I'll call you tomorrow.
When I was in school, I always liked it when the teacher gave us a little extra time to figure out the answer to something. So as you're thinking, Paul, I have no clue what song that I probably know well was inspired by John Lee Hooker's Stuttering Blues. So I'll give you a little extra time. Plus the fact, one of the things that I like to talk about this on this show is how we make choices. How we make choices. And since I found a way to fit John Lee Hooker on the show, John Lee Hooker had a unique approach to making choices. He just decided, I think I'll have all three. What am I talking about? Well, let's have a quick John Lee Hooker song. Thank you. And that was John Lee Hooker from his 1977 album, I'll Play the Blues for You, One Bourbon, One Scotch, and One Beer. No, I have not tried all three at the same time. It's just a song. I like the song. I don't know what time of day you're listening to this show, but it may not be an appropriate time for you to attempt One Bourbon, One Scotch, and One Beer. My point is that sometimes we limit ourselves in the choices we make, not realizing why not go ahead and shoot for all three of whatever it is we're choosing. Hey, it's a stretch, but why not? So, John Lee Hooker was born in 1910, passed away in 2001, had a long career as a blues man with a unique style, telling stories with his talking blues style. And when I retire, if I could learn how to do that, it would truly, truly make my day. But don't get your hopes up. All right, we're going to take another short break. I want you to continue thinking, what did that stuttering blues song remind me of? And then we're going to talk a little bit more before we let you know. Back in a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee. With a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee.
You know, hearing that B-Town commercial made me, crave some espresso, which I just happened to have here handy right next to the mixer. Hold on one second. I do like my espresso, but I have a very, very sad story. Ladies, gentlemen, you two, you may need to get a Kleenex. This is very, very sad. You see, my really nice, really, really nice DeLonghi Magnifica espresso machine is currently having a water sensor problem. This is terrible. This is terrible. People all around the condo here are mourning that I can't hit a button and suddenly have two shots of espresso. Okay, nobody's mourning, but still, here's what's interesting. Now, Paul, how are you going to tie that into talking about the transition to retirement? When I go camping, which I don't do as often as I used to, but when I go camping, do you think I actually go camping without espresso? Would that actually occur? Well, of course not. In Italy, a lot of people don't use an espresso machine to make espresso. You've probably seen these little Bialetti coffee pots. They're fascinating to me. They have a canister on the bottom that you put directly on the burner of your stove or over a campfire. Got to be careful with the campfire part, though, because Bialettis are aluminum, not steel. They will melt if at too high a heat. And you put water up to about a millimeter below a pressure valve on that bottom canister, and then you drop in the coffee filter itself, which is also aluminum. And then you pack that little filter with finely ground espresso. Now, I'm in Florida now, so it's actually, I alternate. It's not always Italian. I like my Cuban coffees, too. And you pack it, and then you take the actual pot that the espresso goes into, and you carefully screw that onto the top of the water canister so that you have sort of like a double boiler. Now, if you're having trouble visualizing this, Bialetti is B-I-A-L-E-T-T-I. And it makes a wonderful, wonderful espresso. When you put it on the stove, it appears to be doing nothing. Eventually, you see just a trickle of steam coming out from that pressure valve, indicating that the water is beginning to heat up. The second that water hits boiling, it shoots up through the coffee filter and into the pot on top. And in like 6 to 10 seconds, it's done once that water hits boiling. And it makes a very, very potent and strong cup of espresso. Now, to make it even more interesting, don't worry, I'm going to tie this all into something you're actually interested in here shortly. But to make it even more interesting, my electric coffee grinder, the one I used before I got the espresso machine, is missing in action. It's somewhere. And considering how many things I've gotten rid of, we'll talk about that too when it comes to retiring. It's shocking. I don't know where it is. I may have accidentally donated it. But when you're camping, most of us don't have unless it's battery-powered, electric coffee grinder. You remember Billy Crystal in, what was that movie? Well, you know which one I'm talking about. The one with Curly. City Slickers, when he sets off that coffee grinder and causes a stampede. Well, mine's not that noisy. It looks remarkably like the Bialetti coffee pot, but it has a handle on the top that goes around and around. It's a hand coffee grinder. So I actually take whole beans, drop them in the grinder, spend about 2 minutes spinning the handle around to get it freshly ground, and then I make my espresso by hand in the Bialetti pot. All right, this takes roughly 10 times longer than pushing a button on an espresso machine. However, It sort of connects you to how our grandparents and prior, pre-electricity, did things. It's relaxing. Somehow the coffee, or in my case espresso, tastes better. When you transition to retirement, you have a lot more time than you had before. May I recommend that you take up doing some things by hand? It's good for your psyche. I find it incredibly rewarding knowing that, okay, I didn't grow the coffee tree, I didn't harvest the bean, I didn't roast the bean, but once I got that bean, I ground it up by hand and packed it into a little hand, non-electric coffee pot that makes a stronger cup than my espresso machine did. So for those of you who are coffee lovers and found that interesting, may I recommend the Bialetti coffee pot. They come in multiple sizes in case you either drink a lot more espresso than I do, which would be difficult to do, or you have guests. How does that relate? Again, doing things by hand like our ancestors did is a way of sort of reconnecting with who we are as humans. And it can be a very, very good thing for you to do. It's also a lot of fun just to run down to B-Town and have an espresso there on Old Main Street, where you're almost always sitting in the shade and Mike always has the fans on. And as mentioned in that ad, I can't say enough, even though they're not on my diet, about the coffee, not just the coffee, the hot dogs made at B-Town Coffee. Okay. Well, I had fun discussing that. I hope you did as well. All right, when we come back, the song that was either slightly inspired or definitely the style of it changed as a result of John Lee Hooker's Stuttering Blues. After the break. You've been listening to Getting There with Paul Puckett, your host. This is the disclosure section of the broadcast. Paul Puckett is an investment advisor representative of Q1 Advisors, located in Virginia Beach, Virginia, serving clients in Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. Paul is also an independent insurance agent representing numerous companies in life, long-term care, and fixed annuities. All recommendations or discussions of investing or insurance products in the show are intended to be general. Therefore, check with your advisor or call me if you're looking for specific advice. Specific advice is never given on the air by anybody. Don't interpret any show you're listening to apply specifically to your situation, since we all have unique situations. Thank you for listening. The disclosure reminds me of something I saw this week. As usual, I'll bring you there indirectly. From a communication standpoint, I like positioning things in such a way where you may not realize where I'm heading, but you'll understand when I get there what I say better than you would if I didn't do it that way. There is actually a purpose. That, and it's my personality, I've always done it that way, and that's how I justify it. So that disclosure reminded me of something I saw earlier this week. There's a firm that manages bukus of money. It's an investment advisory firm, and as you know, and if you don't know, I've mentioned on the show before, but it never hurts to repeat it, investment advisory firms have a form ADV. Whether you've done any business with them, called them, or they know of your existence, you can go to www.sec.gov, that's sec.gov, and you can go to their subsection under education, investor.gov, and check out either an individual investment advisory representative like myself or the firm itself. And when you do, you get a full regulatory record of that individual or the firm. Now, in the firm's case, you have access to the disclosure information that the SEC, or for most investment advisors, the state or the states that they work in, has on file, describing their business, how many employees, how much money under management, how they charge their fees, etc. And then you also have a link for the Form 8 EV Part 2. Now, the Part 2 actually describes for their clients in a regulatory way exactly what they do, any conflicts of interest they may have, any disclosures they must provide, and their fee schedule. Okay, there has been a huge emphasis on how much Wall Street, in its many myriad of forms, charges its investors for the services or products or both that they provide. Matter of fact, I brought up on the show before, the Department of Labor has now issued a new fiduciary rule that applies only to individual retirement accounts and retirement plans like 401ks that limit brokers, particularly, on what products, and insurance agents, I should say, on what products they can provide you when you retire or as you're saving for retirement. Now, the purpose of this rule was to save you money because the administration felt that trillions and trillions of dollars are being wasted by brokers and Wall Street and insurance agents on products you don't need and shouldn't have. And therefore, you're now going to be restricted a little bit. And some of this is good. Some of this is good, not all. You're going to be restricted a little bit on what you can put in a retirement plan or an IRA. And you're going to be moving to a fee from a fiduciary standpoint as opposed to a suitability standpoint. Real quickly, if you remember, a suitability measure basically says if you say your objective is, for instance, growth, the account needs to match that objective. Now, growth might not be what you need, but you know, I always think of the 27-year-old I met umpteen years ago who had inherited some money, and I said, "What, you know, what's your goal?" And he said, "Capital preservation. I don't want to lose a dime." Guy was 27. He needed growth, whether he thought he did or not, and that's part of what a good investment advisor does. At the time, I wasn't an investment advisor; I was a trust officer, but. A good financial professional is going to help you know whether what you think your objective is matches what it probably should be. Now, a fiduciary, in practice, it doesn't work this way, but it should. A fiduciary must do what's in your best interest, regardless of what you think. That's the part that doesn't always get done. And so if you tell a fiduciary, hey, I'm 27. I don't want to lose a dime. Don't put me in the stock markets. I want CDs and I want government bonds. Individual government bonds. I don't want to lose a dime. Well, technically, a fiduciary doing what's in your best interest can't do that. It's not in your best interest. And so they've got to spend some time educating you on why you should listen to them. Well, hey, it's what you pay us for. And in the end, it is your money. But when you work with fiduciary, if you take that term literally, we are limited to doing what we believe is in your best interest. And hopefully we've got adequate training experience to know. Okay, so what am I talking about here? This investment advisory firm that happened to pop up on, I believed it was LinkedIn, I was curious about them. I haven't competed with them, never heard their name. Thought, I wonder who those guys are. So I pulled up their Form ADV. And here's two issues. Again, we are highly regulated. So that's good news for you because that means there's somebody watching us and we have to do what we say we're going to do. And we're measured periodically in an audit, sometimes a scheduled audit, sometimes a surprise audit, where they review our files and make sure that we do, in fact, what we say we do, what we registered to do. Okay. One of the reasons that many investment advisors celebrated the implementation of this new fiduciary rule for the DOL is because we've always been fiduciaries. So no change for us. Now, it's a slight change for me because I'm also an insurance agent. And there are changes coming, again, in what you can and can't do in a retirement plan. But here's what's interesting to me. The purpose is to save you money and to make sure the advice you get is in your best interest, which a lot of people thought it already was. Well, there's this law you've heard me talk about before, the law of unintended consequences. This law applies more, for some reason, to governmental action than just about anything else. Congress says, we are going to cure this problem by doing this. And, of course, whatever this is, it doesn't work out the way they think. Well, here's the thing. One of the reasons I don't like variable annuities is because their fees are just so incredibly high. By the time you pay for the annuity itself in its mortality expenses and its administrative expenses, then you still got to pay the underlying expenses of the funds that you're limited to within that variable annuity. So the average cost of a variable annuity is a minimum of around two and a half, unless you're in one of the no-loads from Schwab, Fidelity, or Jefferson National. But the vast majority of variable annuities, you're going to be paying closer to 3.5% to 4.5%. It is hard to make money when your expense ratio is at that level. So, you know, the government is convinced that investment advisors can do a cheaper and better job for you. This firm charges 2.5% to put your money into mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, meaning your total expenses with this firm, if you have less than $250,000, is 2.5%. You better have more than $2 million with this firm before you even get close to being competitive in price. No, I'm not going to name the firm. My point is, the focus on expenses has gotten out of hand, but that doesn't mean it's not important for you to look at. Be aware of what you're paying, what you're getting, and periodically match it up. But make sure you enjoy your life and don't spend every day staring at expenses. I wouldn't want you to miss the point. Okay, so I apologize for keeping you on the hook on this little quiz question. John Lee Hooker did Stuttering Blues, which I discovered influenced a guy by the name of Pete Townsend to write a song that you definitely know. But just for fun, instead of playing the original song, and I think this is just amazing. And by the way, everything you hear on the show comes from YouTube. Now, I put links to the artist or to where they sell their music, like iTunes, because if you like what you hear, I'd like you to go buy it, download it, and enjoy it. It's part of my mission here. I didn't discover some of this music until I was like 45. So thank God I did. And I hope I show you or expose you to some new music that you want to run out and get. No, I do not make anything on any of those sales. I don't think I'm leaving much on the table. But if I am, I don't care. I want you to have the music. So the song that was influenced by John Lee Hooker's Stuttering Blues was from a little band that you've never heard of called The Who. Okay, you've heard of them. And the song was My Generation, which you're going to hear in a minute, but you're going to hear a different version. Okay, this is so cool, and I'll definitely put a link to this on the website. I've not seen the documentary yet, but I have seen the video that goes with this. This is just funny. So there's this BBC documentary maker named Tim Samuels, and he decided that he wanted to do a documentary illustrating how the elderly are not treated very well, in this case in Britain, because that's where he is. So he decides to form a band, not of primarily professional musicians, he does have one, maybe more, but with the idea that you could go to these lonely old people in care homes and tower blocks and bingo halls and get them to sing The Who, My Generation, as a group. Now, when he first goes out to do this, nobody takes him seriously. But then he bumps into a record label owner named Neil Reed and a U2 producer by the name of Mike Hedges. And they think, wow, giving the elderly people a voice, that's pretty cool. You know what? We should record it where the Beatles recorded their songs at Abbey Road. So they brought in 40 old people. Now, when I say old people, I know some of you are sitting there saying, Paul, don't tell me I'm old. Well, I'm not. When I say old people, I'm using his term, by the way. I prefer to say seasoned or senior citizens. 90-year-old Alf is the guy belting out the lead vocals. And evidently, this video, which went to number one on YouTube, really turned Alf and then a 99-year-old lady named Winnie and a 100-year-old named Buster and the rest of these people into a global sensation. Matter of fact, they end up going on the media in over 50 countries and fly to LA to be on the biggest chat show with the guest star or guest host, George Clooney. Okay, it's called The Zimmers, and the documentary is available on YouTube. I'll put a link up to the song, and I'll put a link up to the documentary. For now, enjoy clearly the oldest rock band you've ever heard singing The Who's My Generation.
This is the first time I've done this, by the way. People try to put us down. Because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful cold.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old. The big sensation.
Talking about my generation.
I'm just talking about my generation.
Talking about my
Now, that really, I mean, talk about a cool idea, and what a great time these people, whose combined age, by the way, of the 40 participants was over 3,000 years. Now, that's not an average age. None of them were 3,000 years old. It's that silly thing that we financial firms sometimes do where you have two people with one with 30 years experience and one with 15, and you say over 45 years of experience, well, combined. It's not necessarily untrue. I've never liked it because it implies, you know, you've been doing something for umpteen years as a firm, and in reality, you're adding together everybody's experience to come up with a bigger number. I find it slightly distasteful. If you end up going to Q1 Advisors' website, and that's how we did it, please let me know, because at the moment I don't remember, but I can tell you I don't like it when it's done that way. So you've got this crowd of people who've been retired for decades and having a blast singing The Who's My Generation. I encourage you to go to YouTube and either Google the Zimmers My Generation or go to www.gettingthere.life. episodes and pull up the video. It's just absolutely hysterical. Couple things before we close out the show for some articles I saw this week that you might relate to your planned or current retirement if you are below the age of 65. The first, now this applies no matter what age you are, is as the rent in this country has taken off in an upward direction as a result of the crisis we had in 07 to 09 in real estate, rent has actually gone way up. Now, most financial planners, bankers, any personal finance expert, including me, suggests that you budget around 30% of your monthly income or less to cover your housing costs. Now, housing costs in this case, we're talking about your rent, electricity, cable, whatever it is you pay, not groceries, not living expenses, housing expenses at around 30%. Well, 11 million people. This is from a study on the State of the Nation's Housing Report from the Joint Center for Housing Studies of Harvard University. 11 million people, a new high in 2014, are spending at least or more than half their income on housing alone. Another double that number, basically, 21.3 million, are spending more than 30%. That's a lot of people paying a lot in housing cost. If you're currently retired on a fixed income, of course, that can be a real problem. If you're planning on retiring, just remember your income is going to have to cover housing, and you don't want that number to be more than about 30%. So you're either going to have to downsize or save more before you retire. Now, the bigger issue, at age 65, you get this magical thing. It's called Medicare. Medicare doesn't cost that much for what it provides, which is pretty comprehensive insurance for your health. Keep in mind, Medicare does not cover the expenses of long-term care. The medical expenses, yes, but not the assisted living home, the nursing home, or the actual expenses of long-term care. Your doctor is still covered. Medicare is relatively inexpensive. Seriously. And it should be, because a lot of people at that age, retired, can't afford to pay more. But health insurance continues to get more and more expensive the older you get until that magical day when you turn 65. So let's say you decide, I actually had a client do this, you decide to retire at 55. Health insurance premiums rocketed over the decade that was leading up to age 65, and he had to take a part-time job just to pay his health insurance costs. Factor in the cost of health insurance if you're planning your retirement. But, you know, there's another article, and this is discussed, every day you turn around and somebody's writing about this. I've talked about Thomas Stanley, my favorite researcher into the wealthy. This is author Thomas C. Corley, who wrote a book with a title that will sound familiar, but it's a different book, Change Your Habits, Change Your Life. You may have heard me talk about Change Your Story, Change Your Life, which is by a Jungian psychologist on the things you can do to enjoy your life more. I recommend both books. What he decided to do is look at two groups of people. people who are making at least $160,000 or more and have a liquid net worth, meaning this isn't including their house, real estate, and other things. This is just their liquidity, also known as cash and investments in the market, of at least $3.2 million. Okay, so that group, $160,000 or more in income, $3.2 million or more in liquid net worth. The second group, having an annual income of $35,000 or less and a liquid net worth of $5,000 or less. And then what he did is he studied the habits, the daily habits, to help predict how they would do. This is purely from a financial standpoint, not a happiness standpoint, just a quick reminder, from a success standpoint. Okay, here's what's interesting. 52% of what he's calling poor people gambled at least once a week, typically on sports. 77% play the lottery. 84% of rich people don't gamble. 94% don't play the lottery. They're not looking for get-rich-quick schemes. Now, this is interesting. Now, I think part of this may be affordability. He doesn't go into that, at least in the article. Maybe he does in the book. But wealthy people evidently value their health more. Those who are at the lower end tend to eat a boatload more junk food and tend to be more overweight. This surprised me. Those who end up becoming very wealthy, or who are, tend to not be alcoholics. They have an occasional glass of wine or beer, but again, they're focused on their health. Now, I know all of us know people that don't fit these descriptions. I get that. But nonetheless, I think it's relevant. Now, this one is really interesting to me, because I've made this mistake in the past, and I'm sure you have as well. Wealthy people who are working on becoming successful and making the most of their lives, they don't hang out with toxic, negative people. 96%, it's funny because it's a complete flip, 96% of the poor, as far as he's defining it, do hang out with people that are toxic negative, but 86% of the higher end do not. I'm going to rattle through the last ones. Watching too much TV, negative thinking. As you're approaching retirement, negative thinking is really not a good thing. And this is the big one I wanted to bring up because I have been guilty of this on occasion myself. Those of you who know me will say, Paul, say it isn't true. We know that's not true. And that's those who have the habits of the wealthy. Rarely, you know, I should say what it is, but I want to put it off a little bit. You got it. They rarely procrastinate. So whether you realize it or not, direct quote from the author, Mr. Corley, whether you realize it or not, quote, procrastination is a big reason why you are struggling financially in life, unquote. I would say actually procrastination is a big reason why you are struggling in life because it damages your credibility and affects the quality of what you actually do. And generally speaking, you have a higher stress level because you know there's stuff you need to get done that you have not gotten done. Well, I have enjoyed the conversation with you here on Getting There. Now, speaking of the conversation, not going to start taking calls yet. That day will come. But look for me to begin putting some surveys on gettingthere.life, www.gettingthere.life. The blah is not actually part of the web address. And in those surveys, what I want is some feedback from you all on what topics you'd like to cover, me to cover, what issues you see, particularly as an investor or as someone heading to retirement or as someone who's just trying to be happy and money gets in the way. What issues you'd like me to cover on the show. I look forward to hearing from you and doing that. And as always, you can always just shoot me an email at paul@gettingthere.life. Music suggestions appreciated as well. Have a great week.